You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and if you're joining us from Atlanta, welcome. We are now broadcasting at noon Eastern on Georgia Now, and this actually feels kind of personal to me. I'm a little bit of a dog. I went to UGA for a year, and I lived in Northeast Georgia. I worked at an abortion clinic in Atlanta way back in the 90s when they were bombing abortion clinics, so you had to be pretty committed to do that kind of work. And I have so many friends and family and colleagues who live in the metro, so hell yeah! Thanks for listening! And of course, we are still here every Saturday on AM 820 WCPT in Chicago, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and across Wisconsin on Civic Media, in addition to YouTube and the podcast and all of the other social media platforms. We are building something really special here, a national conversation about healthcare, democracy, politics, what it means to show up and fight back when our rights and our freedoms are under attack. And speaking of fighting back, I have the perfect guest with me today. I'm so excited. She is somebody who embodies what it means to turn anxiety into action, who every single day gives tens of thousands of people concrete ways to make a difference. She's a political content creator with a massive following. She's an organizer who's been in the trenches since 2016. She's a mom, and we're going to get to this later, but she's also Hollywood horror royalty. It took me a while to put that together. I really didn't know until I was doing research for the show, because I just know her as Jess Craven, the person who pops into my feed when I'm doom scrolling. And then she says something about what I need to know and what I can do about it. And she gives me that little burst of hope, like, yes, I can make it through the day. So I am thrilled that she found the time to join us today. Jess, welcome.
Kristen, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here. It's an honor.
Girl, I am so happy to just be in your presence. And I mean, truly, what I said about the doom scrolling and when you pop into it, when you are the first person I see when I open Instagram, it just makes me go, okay, we're all going to be good. But aww. I want our listeners to get to really know you the way that I've come to know you, because you've become this huge voice in our progressive movement in many ways, because you are that trusted voice in the palm of our hands. But I don't think everybody knows your backstory. So take us back to November of 2016. Trump was elected president for the first time. A lot of people, including me, are feeling shocked and paralyzed. Like, what are we going to do next? And you start Chop Wood, Carry Water. What was happening in your life at that moment, and what made you think, I'm going to just send people emails and keep them informed and give them that little piece of action where they can engage?
It's a great question. Very accidental, as I think many people whose careers have sort of launched into politics over the last 10 years or so. We did not, most of us, intend to become full-time activists or organizers. I was working in sales at a very kind of nothing burger job that was just a paycheck. And I had come from a long career in bands. I was a singer for a long time and, you know, come from a very sort of artistic and academic family. I have always been really interested in politics, but like working in politics was something that I just, you know, it was a little bit of a side dream, but not something I ever thought would actually happen. And I had a young, you know, child. My kid at the time was 5 when Trump was elected the first time. Mm-hmm. So I had been a stay-at-home mom for a while when they were very young. My child is non-binary. So when I say they, I mean my child. And I had just gone back to work part-time so that I could bring home some money, because my husband had been, you know, he's an animator, so he's in and out of work. And Trump got elected. And it was like it has been for so many people, it was like an avalanche. I just got completely buried in, you know, grief and shock. But I guess there was a part of my nature that was a little bit maybe latent at that time, but which has come out full throttle since then, which is just a like, well, what can I do about it? And that was like, it's been a snowball. It started with just, what can I do about it? And then it was like, well, what can I and my husband and my mother do about it? And then plus my two friends. And then it just has grown into this, yeah, very large. It's weird. This was not on my bingo card for life. But yes, it is. Now I have the great good fortune of talking to lots and lots of people about how they can become politically engaged, why they should still feel hope, how they can access hope through action, and what the hell is going on. That's a part of what I do too. So
you brought it up. I'm so excited about it because I really didn't realize how much showbiz was in your background and how much creativity and what an entertainer you were. How do you pivot? Like, how do you take that energy and turn it into what you're doing right now? Or is it the perfect pivot for your interests and your talents and your roots, really?
I mean, it kind of all makes sense in retrospect. Yeah, I come from a family. My dad and my mom divorced when I was 3. My dad went on to move to Hollywood and become eventually a very successful horror filmmaker. His name was Wes Craven. But for my entire growing up, he was not successful. He was struggling. He had pockets of, you know, he'd have a movie that did okay every once in a while. But like, he did not really hit as a big famous filmmaker until I was basically in college. So I grew up with starving artist father in California, long distance. And then I was in New York with my mom and my stepfather, who's a folk singer. And his brother was Harry Chapin. My stepfather is Tom Chapin. So on that side of the family, folk singers, musicians, academics, democratic socialists, activists, you know, Bayard Rustin used to hang out with my family. My stepfather's grandfather was Kenneth Burke, who's a very well-known literary critic who was very active in the 20s and 30s. So like, my family I'm really fortunate. I mean, I grew up steeped in art, in music, reading, thinking, the collective good, and sort of how to like marry all of those things together. So somehow in a weird way, that's all kind of come back to roost in what I do now. I mean, my dad would laugh. He never knew me as a content creator, but I think he would not be surprised. I'm surprised, but that I have ended up in some weird way making little films of my own, I think would really kind of tickle him. But that was certainly not what I was doing when he was alive. I was selling things, and this was not in my future at all, as far as I knew. Because it was before Trump got elected, so yeah.
Right. Trump is like that catalyst. But you were steeped in all of this, but was that who you were when you were a young person? I mean, you can be surrounded by democratic socialists and people who have very strong opinions, but hey, did you care? Or was it really that Trump election that you were like, I've got to be involved here?
No, I did care. I mean, I also cared about climate from a really early age because another one of my relatives, Wallace Broker, on my mom's side, was a very famous climate scientist who actually coined the phrase global warming. So I knew about global warming decades before most people did, and like a pretty anxious kid, so I worried about it from a very early age. And, you know, I went to No Nukes marches in D.C. I did care. But, you know, like most Americans, there was a lot of stuff, let's say, like most white Americans, I took a lot of stuff for granted. And it's very important to emphasize the white Americans there because I think Americans of color have never taken anything for granted for good reason, but I did, and I'm not proud of that. But, you know, you sort of assume democracy is always going to be here. And, you know, I was horribly distressed about Reagan and Bush and the second Bush. I was involved. I wrote letters to the editor, but I always sort of assumed the basic framework would remain. Until now, of course, when that very framework is crumbling before our eyes. So, but yeah, no, I've always cared, but it never became this until, yeah, Trump was a huge catalyst, I think, for a lot of us.
Yeah, and that basic framework every day, it just feels like it's the foundation is being picked away further and further. I'm talking with Jess Craven. She's an activist, an organizer, and a content creator. Jess, you started this Substack, and you've got over 170,000 subscribers, I think, at this moment. You're on TikTok. Yeah. You've got hundreds of thousands of followers there. You've created workshops on democracy and activism. You host a podcast. How many of you are there? How did this evolve? At what point did you realize that this was something bigger than you had ever expected?
I don't know. I mean, there are definitely a lot of days when people are like, how do you do all the things that you do? And I don't know. I have a lot of energy. I'm, as I said, inherently an anxious person, and that anxiety kind of channels into action because that makes me feel better. So I'm actually like a pretty calm, happy person most of the time, but that's because of what I do. Mm-hmm. And I will just say, you know, because I think it's a kind of a cool thing. Like, this is what I was put on earth to do. And I didn't find it until I was 47 years old. So I like to tell people too, that like, you never know when you're going to find your calling, what you were put on earth to do. And this is mine and I know it. And so it's not exhausting for me. Actually, I find it weirdly, like constantly energizing. Yes. I'm so grateful. What an amazing gig I have. Like, it's, I feel very honored and grateful to be in this fight on the right side and dealing with all kinds of wonderful people like you. I mean, I get to meet people like you. It's an incredible gift.
It's just another part of the community that you're building, that we're all building together, that we're all building. Yeah. Everybody who's listening,
we're all building.
Like, we're doing this for a reason, but we're doing it in a completely new media landscape. You are not a traditional journalist. You're not actually a traditional activist either. You're something else, Jess. You are a political content creator. You organize in these digital spaces. You're a trailblazer in places where people are now consuming most of their media. How do you think about this new role and your place in it? Because you're part of something that's really reshaping how we do both politics and activism and journalism, for that matter.
Yeah, I agree. And the funny thing is, like, when I got on TikTok, that was my first platform in 2020. And when I made my first video, I had never seen a TikTok video. Like, I got onto TikTok because one of my friends was obsessed with it. And she was like, you know, the way you talk to me about politics, you should go onto TikTok and make videos like that. And I mean, it was so random. I went on there and started talking about like little actions I put in the newsletter. I called my representatives on TikTok. And suddenly I found that I was becoming a political content creator at the moment, but literally by accident. Like, I can't even tell you how unintentional it was. And then as we went through the Biden years and then came into this new Trump, suddenly realizing, like, it's almost like you've gotten on a surfboard and you're just paddling, and suddenly you realize that your surfboard happens to be riding a wave that has gotten enormous, and you just never intended, like, I didn't know everybody was going to move over to getting their news on social media, mm-hmm. and that I would become one of the people delivering that. Like, it's just a crazy confluence of events. And again, I mostly feel deeply honored and kind of awed with the responsibility of, like, this is, people tell me you're where I get all my news. I'm like, oh my God, that's very frightening, first of all. And secondly, it's a big responsibility. I want to make sure I'm doing it as well and as responsibly as I can.
How do you decide what you're going to put out there? Because there's unlimited news, especially these days.
Yeah, it's entirely either something that I feel like is a very strong and compelling call to action. Like, this is happening, and here's something very concrete we can do. Let's all do this together. Or there's like a call that I want people to make it to Congress, so I will show them. Or it's just something that I've been wondering myself. Like today, I was wondering, why is it that messing with the chair of the Federal Reserve is so dangerous for our economy? I heard that could cause hyperinflation. I wanted to understand why. So I did a bunch of research, and then I thought, I think other people should know this as well. So I'm working on a video about that right now, because I find if I'm interested in it, other people will be as well.
It feels like the root of what you're doing is authenticity. And I think that's the theme for 2026, is authenticity. We're going to go take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to get a little bit more personal with Jess. We're going to find out what keeps her going, how she avoids burnout, and what chop wood, carry water really means when our democracy feels like it's on fire. I'm here with Jess Craven. She's an activist and organizer, a content creator, and a tireless advocate for democracy. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Wow. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Jess Craven. She's an activist, an organizer, a content creator, and the voice behind Chop Wood, Carry Water. Jess, before the break, we were talking about the work that you do, the scale of it, the daily grind. And I have to ask, because I struggle with this myself, you might love what you do, but it's still exhausting. You've been doing it for nearly 10 years. It's a marathon, not a sprint. What keeps you going?
Oh my gosh. I always joke and say really strong tea, which is definitely partially true. I drink really strong tea. I think it would send most people into like a panic attack. But so caffeine, self-care. I have a strong community outside of all of this work. So I have a pretty good sense of when I need to put down the phone, the computer, whatever, and go be with people, either be with my child or with my husband or like other people in real life. The breaks are as important as the work. So that would be part of it. And then I don't know, I love reading. I love history. So I spend a lot of time reading history and I find it deeply, deeply soothing. You know, you read enough history, particularly American history, but world history gives you a real sense of humility about things that are happening now, things that have always happened with humanity, American cycles and patterns. So I find those things really deeply soothing, and all the other things, the art, the culture, the places where fascism can't live, I like to go for reprieve.
Yeah, it all ties back in, doesn't it? Like, it's like this holistic approach. You can't just ever isolate it and walk away from it. But when you can find ways to bring it in and like bolster the work that you're doing, it just gives you that added fire to keep doing
it.
Yeah. How do you know that you're on track? Like, is it the subscriber numbers? Is it, you know, telling people to make the calls? Is it some other objective measure? Or what do you use to measure your success?
Well, I don't know that my success is if people are engaged in democracy. So like personal success is, I feel already so overpaid, like spiritually speaking, for what I do, that, I have some paid subscribers on Substack. I feel very, very fortunate to be making a living at all doing what I do. So success for me, I'm less concerned with followers. Followers are nice, but generally when I see a huge surge in followers, like my biggest surge was right after Trump got elected the second time. Mm-hmm. In the first month of his new administration, I picked up 100,000 subscribers on Substack. I've never seen anything like that before or since. Wow. And to me, that was less about what I was doing than about, oh, look at all of these people who are ready and desperate to do something and how lucky I am that I'm in a position to help them. So that's, you know, if I start getting into ego about it too much, oh, how many followers do I have? How many followers? That's miserable. I mean, you know this, you're on social media. There's no winning down that road. So I just try to stay focused on, if people say things like, this really helped me, I went to my first protest today because of stuff you've talked about, or I called my representative for the first time. That's winning to me.
Yes. When you empower somebody and then they send you a comment and tell you that you've empowered them, that is like, dang.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I subscribe to Jess by going to Craven 101 on any of the platforms. So do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, when I go to protests, like I went this weekend to Ice Out protests, I ran into so many people who follow me either on the Chop Wood Carry Water or on social media. And that is a thrill, like, because these are people who are like, I never used to get involved and now I do. Like, that to me right there, that's the biggest paycheck in the world right there. It's amazing. So.
Totally agree. Well, and I think one of the things that sets your work apart is that it's not just rage. It's not anger. It's not despair. There's joy in what you do. You give people hope. And even when you're talking about really hard things, you still find the silver lining. How do you maintain that? Is it those comments? What is it?
Well, I feel very, very strongly, and I model myself, or I try to sort of use as my guiding star, the activist Heather Booth, who's, you know, went through the civil rights movement and has been through a million different movements and is still going. She was part of the Janes, helping people access abortion before Roe v. Wade. She always talks about leading with love at the center. And what I found early on in this is that if we're fighting the bad all the time, that is exhausting and debilitating. But if we are helping the good, that is very energizing. So for me, I try to think of it less, I try to give less energy to fighting the bad guys than I do to helping the good guys. Or another way I put it sometimes in the newsletter is like, instead of fighting darkness, just bringing a light and helping other people bring their light. And I find that when I approach it that way, that's really energizing, because love and service are very energizing, and they tend to, I believe, build on themselves. So when we get more people working together in community with love at the center, it sounds really cheesy, but that's how we win. I believe that that is how we win. So it doesn't tire me. When I start getting into hatred and too much bitterness, yeah, that's exhausting. And there were moments like this week, what happened, or last week, with Renee Good, you can't, there are moments where you just have to cry, you know, and I did. And I do get angry, and I do get, you know, filled with emotions I would rather not feel. But eventually then I do try to find again, like, how can we get back to helping someone in this situation, turning it somehow to good.
I noticed too, like with Mark Ruffalo at the Golden Globes last night, he had I think it said for the good or be good button on his lapel, and he wanted to talk about it. And that really meant something to me. And I think other people look at the work that we do and think, oh, that means something to me. So how do we continue this chain of good work?
That's right. And I feel it's really important. I know that we'll wrap up, but just this idea of working towards something better to me is so much more important than fighting something bad. That we've got to have goals that are beautiful and visionary and positive to work towards, because again, it's much more energizing and sustainable than just fighting the awful.
Absolutely. And enduring. And when we come back, we're going to shift our gears a little bit, or maybe we're not shifting gears at all because everything is connected, as we have discussed. We're going to talk about what it means to be the parent of a queer kid while also being a political organizer in these times where it is so hard to be a member of that community. And yes, we are going to talk about horror movies, not the one we're living in, but the classics, and what it was like growing up as the daughter of legendary filmmaker Wes Craven. I am here with Jess Craven, activist, organizer, and content creator, and you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I'm here with Jess Craven. She's an activist, an organizer, a content creator, and so much more. And before I ask Jess about how she is surviving the horror movie that is our democracy right now, I need to say that if you missed any part of our show, and you definitely don't want to miss this one, you can find the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly and wherever you get your podcasts. And we are broadcast every weekend across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, in Chicago on AM 820 WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and now Georgia Now at noon on Saturdays. Sorry, noon on Sundays Eastern in Atlanta. And in between, you can find me and Jess pretty much anytime you open TikTok or Instagram, because we are everywhere. Don't be surprised if you're doom scrolling and you accidentally bump into Jess Craven. Consider yourself lucky, because she is, as I said, everywhere, and she knows a few things about doom and horror. So Jess, we've been teasing this all show, so let's talk about it. You grew up in a very remarkable creative household. You talked about it a little bit earlier. Your dad was Wes Craven, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, so many others. He was truly the master of modern horror. Your stepdad is Tom Chapin, the beloved folk singer. You are a Chapin sister. That's a lot of artistic DNA in your universe. How did this environment create you? You kind of talked about it earlier, but like, what was it about the people who surrounded you? It's not just this, it's climate change, it's all of the other things. How did that turn you into Jess Craven, the person who is fueling our fire right now in these desperate times?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a funny sort of like everything that I did before I came to this work has fed the work. And that's a wonderful thing when you end up doing the thing you're meant to do. It's just like, oh, all of that informed it. And even being a little older, I think, has really helped. You know, you live through a bunch of things and you've just got a little bit more life experience with trauma, experience with tragedy, which helps in a moment when things are so dark. But yeah, my family are amazing. And I always kind of took it for granted, but there's just a lot of performers. There's a lot of, it sounds really cheesy, but me and my sister sang in a band together for a long time. My entire family still sings together. In fact, I recorded a song called The 12 Days When Trump Is Gone. It's like a Christmas takeoff on the 12 Days of Christmas, and recorded it live with my family in New York at a small club called The Turning Point with Harmony. And like, that's a really joyous thing that we get to do that is very special and very cool. And I know that most people don't get that. It's just a really nice thing. And then on my dad's side, yeah, he was a, you know, filmmaker who really kind of hit again when I was in college is when Nightmare on Elm Street came out. And before that, he was like trying to, you know, trying to make ends meet. And, but he was really interested in fear and how to sort of manage fear. Dad was like, you know, we had our difficulties. He was not always the easiest dad, but super smart guy, like a master's degree, very smart college professor before he became a filmmaker, very erudite, very well-read, a birder, naturalist, you know, philosophy, lucid dreaming. Like he was just smart. And so I guess I'm very fortunate in that I've been surrounded by really smart people who take that intelligence and kind of find ways to use it with creativity for good. And maybe that's how I stumbled into the newsletter and then the videos. It's just sort of like in my life, the people around me have taken whatever talents they have and sort of said, well, why not use them this way? Like Harry Chapin, you know, he was a folk musician, but then he got really interested in hunger and he got involved with World Hunger Year. And like half of his concerts every year were benefit concerts to raise money for hunger. And he went to DC and advocated for more action. Like, I guess I've just always been surrounded by people who are like, well, why shouldn't I use my voice? And I guess basically, how could you not? And that I think is the core principle for me is the idea of using my voice and then encouraging other people to use their voices, to understand that they are a unique voice that nobody else has, their story, their life experience, their voice. And so when people use their voices, have the courage to stand up and speak out, to me, that is the most beautiful and profound thing and creates just miraculous change. So I guess that's how my family sort of helped create the person that I am. And I will just say, and this is the last thing I'll say is, you know, Dad made Nightmare on Elm Street. And he told me then that the lead character, Nancy, was based on me, which at the time I did not understand at all. Like I was just your typical insecure teenager. I was like, well, no, I just was like, why? Like, I'm not brave. He was like, you're brave and you're this. And I was like, I don't understand why you're saying that. It was just weird to me at the time, but I've taken that to heart, you know, in recent years of just like, my dad believed I was a fighter. I think I am a fighter. And one of the things that happens in Nightmare on Elm Street, if you haven't seen the movie, is that Nancy in the end discovers that she's going to fight back. She fights Freddy Krueger and she finally defeats him, or at least for that incarnation of the movie, by turning her back on him and taking all of her energy away from him. And like, it's stupid, but there are sort of things in there that I have come to implement myself. Like, I don't talk about Trump that often. I'm not obsessed with Trump. I don't want to watch him, think about him. I want to talk about what is possible if we put Trumpism behind us. And I think part of me is turning my back on Freddy Krueger in that way. And also, I guess I am a fighter. I refuse to let these, can I curse? Probably not. Yeah. I don't want these terrible, cruel, corrupt people to have the last say in our country. That would be a tragedy that is just unspeakable to me. And I'm not going to go down without a fight. So that's just me.
So with you, sister. So with you.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'm thinking about your dad telling you this, that you are his inspiration for Nancy, and you being like, I don't really know what that means. And now you're an adult and you have a child and you're thinking it in a whole of it in a whole different way. How has that shaped how you parent, how you approach the world, how you embrace your ability to overcome that fear and turn it into action?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, many of the people who are out there who are most active, not all, but a lot of us are parents or grandparents. right? This is certainly something that you, it strikes you in a different way when you're thinking about how this is going to impact the next generation. So it's not an accident that I had a small child when Trump first was elected. And I was immediately thinking, oh my God, the climate crisis. Oh my God, the gun crisis. Oh my God. Like all the things, and just the way he spoke about women in general. At that point, my child identified as female, you know, abortion rights, all that stuff. So, and now my child, when they were 11, they came out as non-binary. And so they're this incredible, strong, very proud, very secure in themselves, non-binary person who is brilliant and artistically gifted and just amazing. And I want to fight for them. I want to tell the world what it is like to have an incredible trans child and what a blessing that is. Yes. And I want to make sure, again, that this administration does not ruin the world for kids as beautiful and bright and gifted as my child and so many other trans kids and LGBTQ kids and, you know, anyone who feels like they don't fit into the MAGA mold. I think all the time about what kids must feel watching what's happening. And I want them to understand that this is not normal, this is not the only way, and that there are adults fighting for them and working for a more moral, kind politics and society. I think a lot about morality and about how we're supposed to be teaching that to our kids, but our leadership is teaching the opposite. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let that be the only model kids have. So I think about right. that when I make my videos too. Yeah.
Yeah,
think about all of that.
It's the thing that they see. I mean, I have four Gen Z. You and I are Gen X. I've got four Gen Z kids, and I listen to the things that they're saying. And I think, hey, I grew up with Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, and they're growing sure. up with Donald Trump, like two terms of Donald Trump, and this behavior that is a caricature. Like real headlines read like onion headlines, and that is their yeah. foundation. And somehow yeah. we have to correct that, or at least add a little footnote, like this is not normal, this is not how it actually is, because I don't want them to approach the world thinking that this is what it's going to be for the rest of their lives, or to set them on a path where politics is actually like this for the rest of their lives, because yeah. it can't be.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want them to fall into cynicism. And there's cynicism is so dangerous because it is just a decision to give up, basically. It's an excuse to just say, well, it's all screwed, so I'm not going to do anything. And so, yeah, I work with MJ, my kid, a lot on that. And fortunately, they are cynical, but they're also not. I feel like this generation is a very beautiful combination of cynical and deeply loving and inclusive yes. and hopeful. So I love that for them, and I will be fighting till my dying day to make sure that they get the world they deserve.
I sense that you feel the way that I do, that when I feel cynical or sad or hopeless, I look to them and I think, oh, you are giving me the information, the energy, the desire, the need to be able to push forward. And I'm
absolutely
so grateful to have that relationship and that
yeah.
that pathway.
Yeah.
So okay, let's talk about the things. We've talked a lot about family and like the things that push us forward. What are the issues? What are the big things that you are focused on right now, the things that keep you up at night and what you want people to pay attention to?
Well, I mean, climate change always keeps me up at night. It has for, you know, 40 years at this point. So that I'm just used to keeping me up at night. And it's hard, but I've grown accustomed to worrying about that and living with that worry and just trying to take action. But I'm thinking a lot about healthcare. I feel that we are in a critical sort of hinge moment with healthcare, and that things are, and I don't need to tell you this, but that things are just getting so conclusively awful that I'm actually starting to be hopeful that when we finally hit bottom, we can actually start to implement something that looks more like a single payer system. So I'm spending a lot of time thinking about how we get there once we are done bottoming out on whatever this is. Healthcare, childcare, education, are, you know, really recommitting to our educational system, to public education, to higher education that doesn't drown people in debt. College debt is one of those things that we don't talk enough about. Biden did really try to do something about it, and he didn't get enough credit for that. And now Trump is just rolling it all back, and to watch what is going to start happening to people with their wages being garnished, it's just, it's unforgivable to me. So that higher education, healthcare, gun violence, I mean, those are all issues that I'm really passionate about, but I feel that healthcare is maybe the one that I will lean into the hardest this year, because I think it's something we can all agree on. And I think Americans are really seeing more and more that there's really only way, one way forward that's going to work. And we're never going to get there under Republicans. We're just not. They just won't. They won't have it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Of course, I'm a physician. But, you know, also, I'm looking at what even my healthcare was like 10 years ago versus now. And I'm looking at what my patients are saying about what they can access and what they can afford. And it is so different because of these high deductible plans. So they're not even going in for basic things. And we're diagnosing cancers and other chronic diseases so much later. So their outcomes are that much worse. So I think this is just the beginning of what will be a terrible outcome as the years start to pile on. But I also feel like people are really starting to feel it. And this is a real opportunity for us. Jess, we have to take a break. We only have one segment left and we have so much more to talk. We could talk for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, let's talk more about hope, real hope, not toxic positivity, but the hope and what we're telling our kids about the future that we're building. I'm here with Jess Craven. She's an activist, an organizer, a content creator, and somebody who is showing us how to turn fear into action every single day. And you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, hanging out today with Jess Craven, activist, organizer, political content creator, mom, all the things. Just listening to you talk, Jess, about all of the things that we're facing, that our kids are facing, especially in our last segment, just made me feel like it's so overwhelming and it's so scary and people feel powerless right now. And the murder of Renee Good really hit home with so many of us. I know for me, like you mentioned earlier, you know, it brought you to tears. Me too, many times. Yeah. The physician who was offering to go take her pulse and the ICE agent who said, I don't care. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, what do we need to do to help each other out right now? So I'm asking you, my friend, who incites hope in people and seeds clouds with beauty and hope and light, what's your message right now? If somebody is listening and they're thinking, I want to do something, I'm inspired, where do they start?
Oh, that's my favorite question. I mean, the first thing I will say is that the trick is that when I am feeling in despair, when Trump was first elected, the first instinct for me is like, let me take an action. And what I have learned is that with action comes hope. So it's not, oh, I feel hopeful, so I'm going to go take some actions. It's, no, I feel really hopeless. I'm going to go take some actions. And then, oh, wow, look at that. I actually feel a little bit more hopeful. I'm going to go take another action. Oh, wow, look at that. I feel really good. Every time I feel depressed by the news, I mean, obviously, there are moments where you just have to sit and cry. But what I try to do is, what can I do? Can I call my representatives? Have I done that today? Is there a phone bank I can jump on to try to help an elected person, a candidate get elected? Is there an organization that is trying to raise some money? Can I put out a link on social media and say, hey, this is a good place to give if you're upset right now? What can I do? And I find that the same thing with the protests. You know, I never really want to go to protests. I always feel a little afraid. What if something goes wrong? You know, I get afraid just like everybody else does. I'm tired. I just want to put my feet up and watch Netflix. But then when I go, I know, like I've got smart feet at this point. I know to just go. And then I'm there and I just think, I'm walking on air. I'm so grateful to be here with these people. And now I feel 10 feet tall. And so any action will start to get you there. But I really encourage people to join a community, to join either an Indivisible chapter. I'm a huge, huge proponent of Indivisible. You can go to indivisible.org, join an Indivisible chapter. They're all over the country. Join a Visibility Brigade chapter and just go and, you know, stand on an overpass with some people once a week for 2 hours and put up signs that say things like, you know, ICE out for good. That it actually really makes other people feel better to see that. That's social proof that there are other people who share people's feelings, and it matters. You know, go register voters, anything. Go on an ICE patrol. God, with ICE, there's so much you can do. I know a group here who just started bringing food to an apartment building where there are 30 families who are hiding out from ICE or who have lost family members to deportation. They're bringing them groceries once a week. I mean, there's so much good to do. And I'll just say before I close, like, when I was going through a tough time once, first of all, chop wood, carry water is a saying my dad taught me when I was going through a divorce. How to get through tough times, you chop wood, carry water. You get through the day you're in. You don't worry about the future. You take action. But someone else taught me, you'll always be okay as long as you've got someone to help. And so when I feel really bad, I look for where I can be helpful. How can I help bring a light? How can I help move the good forward? And it always makes me feel better. So that is just a suggestion and a formula for sanity and calm that has worked for me. And I hope it will work for some of you too.
That's also what Mr. Rogers said. He said, find the helpers.
Yeah. I love that guy.
The wisdom.
I grew up watching Mr. Rogers. I cried through the documentary. I love that guy. But yeah, seriously, it's true. It works.
Yeah. And we can bring people along. You know, when you talk about joining an organization and finding other people, you can do that, but you can also bring people with you. Do you have any
Yes.
advice on how people can engage their friends and their neighbors and others in their community to join us in these efforts? Because that's what it's all about. It's not about one person. It's about all of us.
Yeah. I mean, what I try to do now when I go to a protest is sit down the day before, 2 days before, and just text like 10 people. Hey, do you want to come with me? Meet me on the train station, you know, this train station at this time, and we'll all go down together. Because it's sort of like vote tripling, where you try to get three other people to vote after you vote. I try to get three other people to come with me to a protest, because that's, we're trying to triple, quadruple the numbers of people there. So there's been a lot of really interesting focus groups and surveys, and most people who oppose Trump say that the reason they have never taken an action is because nobody has ever asked them to. Mm-hmm. And so you may think, well, if they wanted to go, they would go. No, they're waiting to be asked by someone they know. So invite a friend. Invite somebody you know who's unhappy but hasn't quite taken that next step. And maybe they'll come with you just because you say that you're going to get lunch afterwards. And then you're starting to build a little activist right next to you. And that's how it starts.
That's how it works with my kids. Come with me, and then we'll go to Qdoba, and they're all in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to put the carrot at the end of the stick there. Just like, yeah, we'll go get boba. For us, it's boba. We'll get boba afterwards. Okay, I'll go.
Jess, walk us through where our listeners can find you, because you are everywhere.
Well, I mean, I am at Chop Wood, Carry Water Daily Actions on Substack, or you can just look for Jess Craven on Substack. And on all social media platforms, I am at JessCraven101. So just at JessCraven101. You can find me on TikTok, Threads, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. Because,
everywhere.
You know, we need to reach people everywhere.
That's right. Jess Craven, you are amazing. Political content creator, organizer, activist, you have done it all. Thank you so much for being here tonight. This is exactly the conversation that I needed, and I know our listeners needed it too. Thank you.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for having me. It's been a total delight to talk to you. You are amazing. Thank you for what you do.
Just the beginning, sister. You can find Jess's daily actions, as she said, on Chop Wood, Carry Water on Substack, Jess Craven 101 on every platform. And when you see us on your socials, don't forget to like, subscribe, ring the bell, comment. We love all that stuff. That helps us know that we're doing the right thing. We are here to build community, and our community is you. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. We are on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Many thanks to our excellent team, Abe, Nick Tierman, who composed our theme song, Nathaniel Gonzalez, who does our graphics, and on behalf of the whole team, I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly saying take care of yourself and each other. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.